Well, Shabbat Shalom, everybody. I'm just going to share a word here, or a few. Today is the Shabbat before Hanukkah, and we'll be gathering with our friends, with our families, around the menorah this Wednesday night to light our first candle. And what I'd like to do today is reflect on the Hanukkah menorah today. So if I could invite you to just close your eyes for a moment and just visualize lighting your Hanukkah. Watch the warm glow as you transfer the flame of the shamash to your first candle. What does the Hanukkah menorah mean to you? What do you reflect on? And what do you feel when you sit at the table and watch the flames burn? My candles burn for maybe 30, 45 minutes or so. Some nights I get distracted and move on to other things too quickly. Often we play dreidel at the table while we watch them burn, or sit together with tea and hot chocolate, moments of laughter and joy. I love to watch the flames transfer from one to another, and then to watch as the last moments of the flame fade into a glowing ember, vanishing into a trail of smoke, and I'm left feeling nostalgic. It's really just a candle, a light in the dark for a short time, and then it's gone. Yet, even with all of the distractions, there's still something eternal that I can just barely touch within the Hanukkah flame. I don't often share about my extended family here. However, the past few years, I found myself reflecting on my grandmother and her life during Hanukkah. If you would allow me to share a bit of her story. Hanukkah was the one thing that my grandmother kept of her Jewish practice. She lived to be 101. My cousins all called her Bubby. We called her Grandma. Grandma's father, Zelig Jacob, first saw his future wife, Esther Chaya, in Minsk, playing in the street when she was just 12 years old. And he said, "I'm going to marry her." And he did. Grandma's mother had gone to work at a tobacco factory when she was just 7 years old. Her job was to test the cigarettes. Grandma's father was a brilliant craftsman and furniture maker, but he learned to drink when he was drafted into the Tsar's army. They would give soldiers vodka to stay warm. They were a traditional Jewish family. They had a tough life in Russia and were persecuted for being Jews. The children had to hide in the outhouse from the Cossacks. Her father managed to get to America in 1904 to begin making a living, and then he brought his family over 1 year later. They came on a ship called the Fatherland, and landed in Ellis Island in New York. Grandma was born in America in 1914. She was the baby after five sisters and one brother. Her birth name was Malcha. Our daughter, Shoshana Malcha, is named after her. But as the story goes, the midwife didn't like the name, Malcha, so she changed it to Mildred on her birth certificate, and that's what stuck. Grandma grew up in Brooklyn in the Jewish section, and her father went to the local shul. Her earliest memory of New York City in those days was her Bubby, who was the family nanny, taking her for the first time to the public baths. At 4 years old, she had gotten too big for the sink. A few years later, her Bubby died, leaving her on her deathbed with these words spoken in Yiddish, "Malinche, be a good little girl. Mind what your parents say. Be religious, and don't stamp your little feet." Grandma's mother made challah every Friday. She baked vodka and strudel. At age 62, she went to school for the first time and learned how to sign her name. Her dad struggled through life in Brooklyn. He would come home from drinking schnapps at shul and pass out in his basement workshop. My grandmother said at the beginning of World War I, she lived through the Great Depression, World War II, Vietnam, etc. She went to Hunter College in New York City, joined the government union in D.C., and married my grandfather, a hardworking union man, a secular non-Jew. Her parents didn't approve and cut ties. That was that. My grandparents then moved to a suburb in Maryland and eventually built a home on an old apple orchard in what was then mostly farmland. It was a great house to visit as a kid. We would race up and down the long hallways and admire the large grandfather clock and many items of artwork that represented years and years of travel. We had a pool to swim in, tractors to ride, and we had dogs to play with. I have 1,000 memories captured in smells and reflections and images from their home. Most of my memories circle around summer vacations, Thanksgiving feasts, and Christmas. Brought in by my grandfather, secular Christmas, gift-giving, and eating was a big deal. Jewish life was left to some snappy Yiddish phrases, stories of a world long past, and a passion against anything anti-Semitic. I'm telling this story because I have one small memory, an image in my mind that until recently I hadn't given that much thought to. My grandmother kept a small Hanukkah menorah on a wooden cart in the family room by the large open fireplace. And I can still see with clarity, amidst the fire, the Christmas gift wrappings, the leftover feasts and empty pie plates and wine glasses, a row of Hanukkah candles burning in the background. As a child, I never understood what they were for, what they were, but I can still see them clearly. And little did I know that I would one day gather with my family around the Hanukkah menorah to light these same lights. Little did I know that they would become something that would light up my children's eyes with anticipation and hope. And little did I know that this glow in the background of the family room would become something that I would cherish, something that I would pray for, my children's 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 to cherish also. Fires and gifts and feasts and wine and pie also still hold a special place in my heart, but the light of the Hanukkah candles endures with something, how do I say, it's as if these mysterious candles in the background of my memory speaks to the meaning of these candles themselves. They held within their fading flames something that called out to me to take hold of and to nurture and to grow. Even lit without blessings, without Hanukkah explanations and songs, without the meaning retold, these candles held the glowing embers of an enduring covenant with God, of a people and a past almost lost within a generation. Hidden within the flicker of these flames is Hanukkah. Hanukkah is a complicated holiday. In one sense, we're remembering a bloody military war. The story goes that the evil Greeks invade and take over the temple. Judah Maccabee leads a resistance movement and against all odds defeats the strong Greek armies. And they find the temple desecrated. They rededicate with the lighting of the menorah where one day supply oil lasts, not one day, but 8 days. Of course, the real Hanukkah story as told in the book of Maccabees is more complicated. Greek Hellenistic society was the crown of civilization. It was a modern melting pot seeking universalism, modern values and ideas and institutions. The real Hanukkah battle wasn't only between Jews and Greeks. It was an enduring battle against Jewish assimilation. Yes, the Greeks did put a statue of Zeus in the temple, but Hellenized Jews kept it there. The first man that Matthias Maccabee killed at the start of the rebellion was a Jew who slaughtered a pig on the altar. The Maccabees opposed Jews who wanted to seem less Jewish, even attempting to remove the marks of circumcision from their flesh. The Hellenized Jews wanted to mature beyond the old world Judaism of their fathers and be welcomed into the modern Greek world. I would imagine that if we lived during that time, we'd feel divided and torn between aggressive assimilation on the one hand and oppressive zealous extremism on the other. I don't know that we would welcome a Maccabee into our home. He might not like it. And perhaps this is a war that we're still fighting. I think if we are divided today about issues, imagine what synagogues faced in 167 BCE. I think that it's meaningful that Jewish tradition decided to remember this complicated struggle by lighting the candles of the menorah. Instead of the darkness of war, we remember the light of God's presence in the sanctuary, a light that must endure within us from generation to generation, l'dor v'dor. Now, For us Messianic Jews, Christmas is also a complicated time, is it not? This is an interesting week. We'll be welcoming Hanukkah on the 25th of Kislev, Wednesday night, which also is the 25th of December, Christmas Day, and I found out that these dates correspond every 15 years. For decades, Needham has held a holiday tree lighting ceremony in the town center. A few years ago, the town of Needham considered adding Hanukkah-themed ornaments to their town Christmas tree in order to be more inclusive of the Jewish community. I'm part of the Needham Clergy Association, and we discussed this, and we all seemed to agree that a Jewish Christmas tree is actually more offensive. The representative from the local conservative synagogue said, "Jews don't do evergreen trees. Just let it be a Christmas tree." For many, Hanukkah and Christmas feel like the borderlines between Christianity and Judaism. And it's more complex for us Messianic Jews. I can't tell you how many times I've been asked, "So, do you celebrate Christmas or do you celebrate Hanukkah?" And my answer sort of depends, you know, I said, where do I stand based on how I answer this question? You know, American Christmas is actually quite new. Did you know? Christmas didn't become a federal holiday here until June 26, 1870. Inspired from literature by Washington Irving and Charles Dickens, Americans searched the history books to gather traditions to make what most Americans experience as Christmas today, the tree and the wreaths and lights and gift-giving and festivities. Before this, Christmas was once canceled by the Puritans in 1645. Boston outlawed Christmas in 1659 all the way through to 1668. They felt that celebrations in their day were filled with debauchery and self-indulgence, the opposite of the humble birth of the Messiah. It's a complicated history. We like complicated histories. It's just part of who we are. The Norse in Scandinavia celebrated the winter solstice with a 12-day log burning ceremony filled with drinking, the roots of today's 12 days of Christmas. Rome celebrated the birthday of Mithra, the god of the sun, on December 25th. The festivities were timeless, times of lawlessness and feasting and more drinking. It was not by coincidence, then, that in the 300s, Pope Julius I set December 25th as a day to partake of the Eucharist to celebrate the birth of the Messiah. But, you know, we might look at this negatively, but perhaps it was for noble reasons. I mean, think outside the box a little bit. They were trying to reframe these pagan festivities around the life of the Messiah. This made sense, I think. It's similar to how we Jews have done this to glorify Hanukkah to look more like Christmas. Lights and gifts, the mensch on a bench, you know, so that our Jewish children would not feel excluded from the joy-filled spirit of Christmas around us. Is it not true? This is the case. Most of the Christmas carols we know are written by Jews. Even before Constantine, the early Gentile followers of Messiah would turn pagan temples into churches and recast new Christian meaning into previously pagan symbols. And I'll suggest that this is actually a Jewish idea. The Jewish temple that God outlined in the Torah reflects the pagan temple of the Babylonians. Animal sacrifices are done for the God of Israel instead of pagan idols. Circumcision was actually reframed around God's covenant with Israel. God can take twisted things and redirect them for his own glory, is the idea. As it developed, Christmas can be a beautiful experience of faith for many, actually accentuating what we Messianic Jews might call the most important moment in Jewish history, the first coming of our long-awaited Jewish Messiah. At a time when the world was surrounded in darkness and people were looking to pagan festivities to bring life into the darkness, what better time for the nations to remember the true light of the world? I digress. Christmas is also complicated. Some Messianic Jews reject Christmas entirely. Some choose to embrace it, culture and all. Personally, I prefer to sort of embrace the tension. I sit with the experience of my Jewish people in the wake of centuries of persecution. We have defined ourselves as Jews by not celebrating Christmas. I'm there too. I sit with the secularization of Christmas and how it has contributed to the same kind of Jewish assimilation that we stand up against during Hanukkah. I'm there too. And yet I love the Messiah, who is to me the heartbeat of our Jewish people. I'm there too. I love my Gentile brothers and sisters who have come to trust in him, who have come alongside in almost a Jewish way, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, through our Jewish king. And I sit with the felt need to retell of the incarnation. From my perspective, the greatest Jewish hope with the same intergenerational vigor that we remember Pesach and Mount Sinai and the wilderness and the national Jewish victories of days long past. And at Rook, we've created a way to do this that we've been experimenting with for the past, say, 10 years or so. Zichron Emanuel is a Seder modeled after the Passover Seder where we retell the story of Yeshua's birth. And this year, we are going to connect it with the eighth night of Hanukkah on January 1st. When the menorah is burning at its brightest, bringing God's light into the world, we look to him. We look to Yeshua, his light born in a dark world to bring healing to our world. Back to my grandmother, if you will. One story my grandmother loved to tell was when members of the local Baptist church knocked on her door. She opened the door and shouted, "Jesus was Jewish," and slammed the door in their face. In her later years, she would often reflect on this. We heard this story many times. You know, she would say, "Why is it that Christians have always hated the Jews? Jesus was a Jew, don't they know?" Well, after I became a follower of Yeshua, Judaism became important to me. My grandmother thought it was quite interesting that her grandson had become a rabbi, though I never quite know what she thought of me also believing in Yeshua. As for me, Yeshua is the light of my world. He saved my life. He is my life. And after I came to know him, I wonder if he used my grandmother's words about the Jewish Jesus to speak to me in some way. Yeshua took the fading flicker of the Hanukkah candles on the wood cart in the family room by the fire and brought them to life. In Jerusalem during Yeshua's day, they would light a huge golden menorah that one could see for miles around. And I wonder if Yeshua and his disciples had this in mind when he stood up in Jerusalem in the temple and he called out, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." And when Yeshua walked in the temple courts during Hanukkah in Yochanan 10, the political leaders asked him, "Tell us, are you the Mashiach?" And he answered, "My sheep hear my voice. I know them and they follow me. I give them eternal life. I and the Father are one." My grandmother was wiser than I know. Yeshua certainly was a Jew. For us, he is our Shamash, and we must lift him up high on our Hanukkah. Feasts, the fireplace, gifts, wine, and pie was Christmas at Grandma's. Yet, in some mysterious way, this simple act that my grandmother did, lighting a flame on Hanukkah, is what passed Yeshua's light into me. I saw that the Hanukkah menorah God had given me to hold for my family might go out if I did not pick up the candles. And of course, other parts of my lineage are important to me as well, but this is something more than a cultural heritage. This is a call on my life with God, a shared covenantal life passed from Lador Vador, one generation to the next. Do you know there is a tradition that God preserves the flame of Abraham and Sarah within every Jew, no matter how far he or she may have strayed? And even though Hanukkah is a minor Jewish holy day, my grandmother's Hanukkah candles silently carried the torch of our Jewish identity until I could hold the flame once more. Now, each of you has your own Hanukkah story. And it's now up to you to take the candle and pass it on to each other. And so allow me to come back to our first question. What does your Hanukkah menorah mean to you? This Wednesday night, hold your candle close. Treasure our Messianic Jewish community. Treasure each other. Treasure your family. Treasure those you love. And light the menorah that endures within all of these things. Let your heart burn for his love and pass it on to the next generation. Shabbat shalom and a chag sameach in advance.